All right, ladies and gentlemen, time for another episode of Strength Academy with Mundo here. Once again, I'm joined by Grayson.
How's it going, everybody?
And so I think this is episode 60.
60?
Yeah, 60 in the bank. But so today we kind of wanted to just talk a little bit about the meet we just had, some of the results that we got from some of the things that we were testing out as far as like our programming and some ideas for competition and even new equipment. Like I tested out some new equipment this time and, you know, I have some feedback for Onyx straps, but, you know, I guess I'll start with, who we started with, and that was with Audie. She's, this is probably like her second time competing, third time competing.
I think third,
maybe
yeah.
Third. So, she actually increased her total, I think, by 8 kilos.
Yeah, and on a 5 for 6 performance.
Yeah, on a 5 for 6 performance. So, and then I got a few compliments from random people that I've never met before after the meet, telling me that, you know, they were impressed by Audie. Like, she's not the one that lifted the most weight, but they just seem to be the most impressed with how she moved, like her movement quality.
So. Well, yeah, the feedback that I got was just like her bottom position in the snatch is so low.
Yeah.
And so upright. Like that people were really...
They're just like, oh.
Well, because, you know, usually when beginner lifters are coming out, they didn't have the benefit that Ari had where she started very weak and learned the full movements first. Yeah.
Right.
So she never, I mean, she occasionally will power something, but it's always like there's the capability of having that low position.
Right.
So she's not having to kind of work through those same struggles that a lot of beginners you see where it's kind of like fighting to find the bottom position.
Yeah, exactly.
So yeah, she did really great. And then Jess went 6 for 6 after first meet in like a year and a half.
Yeah, that was fantastic. Like I was really impressed with how well Jess did and like her approach in competition, and she had a little bit of panic before the meet because, like, I don't know if she just got anxiety.
As one does.
Yeah, know. Like, and everybody does to a certain extent, but she just vocalized it a little more than everybody else does, so I just found it a little bit humorous in that aspect. But she did really well. She did fantastic.
Yeah, a really good lesson that, you know, if you're training really hard for something, those last few weeks are going to feel like they're really challenging and you're kind of really kind of like having to work hard and you don't feel that great because you're training super hard, and just kind of trusting that taper will allow you to express what you've been building on. I think it was a really good reminder for her that even if like it doesn't feel like you're ready, that doesn't necessarily mean that's an accurate reflection of your physiology at that moment. And yeah, she stayed focused. We had some long rests, so we had to do a couple of waves between the first and second attempts.
Yeah.
And yeah, the whole thing all came together really well for her, and I was super super proud of her for kind of overcoming that apprehension about getting back on the platform.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, it was really great. And then we had a little bit of a break, so there were 3 sessions, 2 women's and 1 men's, and then Mundo and I both got on the platform at a local meet for the first time in a long time.
In a long time, yeah. It's been a while for me. So I actually picked openers that were the heaviest openers that I've attempted in competition in a long time. Like collectively, my opening total was higher than I've ever opened at before. So just trying to test the waters for some heavier weights and get comfortable trying to make these weights in competition. And I made my openers, so I got 85 and 100 for my snatch and clean and jerk, and then I went on to 88 in the snatch and just couldn't quite get it. There was some little technical things that I was doing that kind of just put me out of position, and I know I need to work on them, so I have time. So the good thing about this meet for me is that it wasn't like a do-or-die meet. I'm already qualified for Masters Nationals. I just used it kind of as a way to kind of like test the waters for opening a little heavier, as well as trying to get some heavy lifts in the middle of the training cycle. So we still have about roughly 4 months. And I think I've got a lot of work to do, but it's going to pay off in the end. So I'm looking forward to this next block of training leading up to the competition that I'm actually training for. This one was like a little bit of a
tune-up.
More of like a tune-up, yeah, like a check stop in the middle of the training cycle to see where I'm at. So,
yeah. And, so I looked back at my competition history on the new bars, USAW, page. And this was the first meet. I went all of 2019 without competing. So, this was my first, this was my first meet since, in like 18 months or something like that. So I've been just kind of getting back into shape. As I kind of talked about, I spent a couple months just working on some body weight control and flexibility training and just kind of doing some deadlifts. And so this last few weeks, I've just been kind of reacquainting myself with the snatch and clean and jerk, trying to see if that increases in flexibility I had kind of could correspond to some improvements in position. And the snatch was a little finicky, so I didn't open anywhere near a PR. So I did 90 and 95 and missed 100. But it was definitely, I was happy with the bottom positions that I was getting into. It's just, I'm struggling a little bit on the pull right now, just trying to iron out a couple technical things. But the improvements that I made in my squat positioning really, really paid off on the clean and jerk. So I was able to open up at 115. And take 120 and 125, which was a 2 kilo competition best. And yeah, I was really happy to not power clean anything on accident. That's always been one of my... So yeah, that power cleaning on accident has always been one of the things that I struggle with, especially in competitions, because I've got a pretty good pull compared to my front squat. So if I get a little overexcited, I tend to power clean a little bit. But I was able to take them all down to the full squat, and that saved my legs just enough to get a couple of good jerks in. And yeah, I'm really excited to take 2020 as a year to really focus on training a little harder and kind of pushing myself again. I kind of coasted for most of 2019, just kind of maintaining, working a lot on just positions. And so I'm excited to kind of start building again from there. But yeah, I got that little PR on the clean and jerk. And then Chris had his first meet since his shoulder surgery 5 months ago.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
So he had a rotator cuff repair. So we've been doing a lot of rehab. And we really only spent, you know, 12 weeks leading up to this just kind of relearning all the lifts, just trying to get comfortable with the, you know, new shoulder positions and opening those things up. And he had a tremendous meet. I always forget how well he competes.
Right, yeah.
Because in training leading up, he had, you know, it was hit or miss at 100. Things were just kind of a little off. But at the meet, he took a safe opener at 95, made a big jump to 103 or 4 on the second, and then took 110 on the third, and it looked great. So it's safe to say that his shoulder is kind of back in there. Again, we took a conservative opener for him at 135 for the clean and jerk. And then his main goal is he wanted to try to chase down one of our guys, Alan. Chris is the snatch record in that weight class, and Alan has the clean and jerk record. So Chris wanted to try to take a crack at it. So he took 145, big jump to 145 on his second. Good clean, just a little off in the jerk. And he just decided to do a full send, as Tyler would say, and put 151 on the bar to try to break that record. And he cleaned it pretty well. Just not quite there on the jerk, but I think the coolest thing about that was I had seen him miss 150 in the front squat a couple of times, so like he cleaned more than he'd front squatted in that whole training cycle at the meet. Is really, really cool, and that means that his speed getting under the bar is getting a lot better. And that once we kind of get his leg strength back up there, he'll have a lot more in the tank for that jerk. Sure. I always, I think that, you know, one thing I wanted to talk about as far as the meet recap goes is just how doing local meets, so like big competitions is always kind of crazy. There's, you know, AO finals, there's a lot of kind of, you know, People are friendly, but it's, you know, you're taking it seriously. It's a competition. Everyone's trying to kind of jockey for the best position they can be in within the session.
Right.
And one thing that I really forgot about since it's been a while since we've gone to a local meetup there is just how cool it is to have, you know, lots of new lifters, and the community that they have up there in Santa Fe is really great. And I just love getting to see all of our friends from other clubs, guys from Durango and you know, just kind of having that moment where you're just kind of there. And I really love local meets because it's so much lower stress on us as coaches that we can kind of really enjoy being there. And it even though it was three sessions, so that's, you know, six hours of lifting. I think we were there from, well, you were there from like 8 to 5, you know, right, it was an all day event. But it's amazing to me how, you know, being in those kind of situations, like you just kind of get to just be there. There's no, I wasn't really worried about anything else. Right. It was very in the moment, getting to catch up with people and chat. And I really like the community that we have here in New Mexico. And I think that going out to those local meets is a really good way to kind of stay connected with what it's really about. Because it's great, you know, having people performing at the national level and going to those meets. But seeing people like Jess and Ari and, you know, a handful of others from other clubs that were doing their first meet, or seeing the improvements people have made since the last time you saw them compete.
Yeah.
I think, you know, there was a lot of people that I had seen a couple times before make some really good technical strides. And it's always cool to see people who don't have a lot on the line and are just doing this because they love it and they think it's a lot of fun, kind of making those improvements. And I think that's, you know, because for every, you know, national competitor you have, you know, 8 or 9 people that are just kind of rec league weightlifters where it's, you know, they're doing this for fun.
Yeah,
and I think that,
that's true. That's,
you know, really true. Seeing people put that much work and time into something that, you know, you're not going to get recognition for that local meet like you would for, you know, winning a AO series or something like that. But I think that it's almost,
I think
more pure in that way where it's like you're doing it for doing its sake. And I really like that.
Well, I think that's part of the reason why local meets are so great is because there's no medals. Like there wasn't any places or medals or participation trophies or anything. You're just doing it to do the meet. And that was like, For me, like, there wasn't anything, I wasn't competing for anything other than just to try to compete and to just try to, like, make some lifts on the platform. So, like, that's part of that local experience that, like, a lot of time gets lost in translation to the bigger meets. Like, you don't have that just sense of, oh, I'm doing this just because I love it. Like, I want to compete just because I like to compete. Like, I like testing myself. I like testing, you know, the waters of lifting these heavier weights and doing it in front of other people. And the aspect of competition as opposed to training is just like, you know, you don't get to try that snatch 10 times on the platform. You get 3 chances and that's it.
Yeah.
Like the brevity of it and the finiteness of the meet make it a different experience in general. So like, I like local meets for that reason. Another reason was, this meet was in honor of John Davis, who was not only a gold medal Olympian both before and after the Second World War, but he was also a veteran. And that's why there was that time lapse in between when he won one gold medal before the war and then another gold medal after, as he was serving in the war himself. And he came back from war and you know, he continued to love weightlifting, compete in weightlifting, even though, you know, the country that you know, he fought for didn't necessarily accept him because of his skin color.
And, yeah, so he was the first American to clean and jerk 400 pounds.
Yeah.
And as Shane kind of talked about in his introduction during the sessions, you know, so he does this meet in memorial of him every year.
Right.
Because he died in Albuquerque and he's buried in Santa Fe at the Veterans Cemetery up there.
Right.
And you know, just kind of hearing the story that, you know, because of, you know, some meets being held in cities that were segregated, that he would have to sleep in his car because he wasn't able to get a hotel room. And then he'd sleep in his car and go out and break records.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, that's just kind of the ultimate, like, you know, I'm like, I don't know. I can't imagine having that little support in what you're doing and still going out and striving and being right. The best, kind of in spite of having to deal with the fact that, you know, maybe you can't use the water fountain at the venue. Like, yeah. That's just insane to me.
Or you can't get a hotel room because you're not allowed to sleep in that hotel. Like, just because of the color of your skin, you know, it just goes back to a time when, you know, like, we placed the importance of somebody's outward appearance over the character of their, you know, their internal character. And John Davis was one of those people that worked hard. You know, his work showed. He was an Olympian twice. And, you know, one of the first people ever, not just, you know, I can't strive the importance of this, like, ever, to clean and jerk to 400 pounds.
Yeah, right? It's the equivalent of the four-minute mile.
Yeah, the four-minute mile is kind of roughly the same thing to us. It's like, this is one of the first human beings to break that barrier.
And, which opened it up for everybody. Right. You know? Like, so, somebody had to do it the first time to show that it was possible.
Right, exactly.
And I think that that's so cool. And, you know, it's just kind of... you know, heartbreaking that, you know, what Shane said is he kind of, you know, died in obscurity. You know, he was kind of forgotten as weightlifting kind of fell off the map or fell off the radar. And, yeah, I mean, like he said, it's, we're all kind of his extended weightlifting family, because it's, you know, we're kind of carrying on the same passion that, that he had for the sport. And, you know, I'm not going to lie, I might have teared up once or twice when Shane was talking about it. Yeah, like it's a really moving, you know, tribute. And I really appreciate the guys up at Miller Gym for putting on that meet every year. Yeah. And, you know, talking about the history of the sport. Because I think that that's something with the new influx of people, you know, it's really cool to kind of make sure that everybody knows, you know, the people that laid the groundwork for you to do what you're doing now. So yeah, always a great meet, the John Davis Memorial. If you're in the kind of Four Corners area and you can make it to Santa Fe in January, we always have people down from Colorado and stuff. And it's just a special meet.
Yeah, for sure.
Because of who it's in honor of. And I'm happy to say that, you know, we missed the first one, but we've been there 5 years in a row. And we're looking forward to doing another five there.
Yeah, keep showing up. But yeah, it's just like, you don't get that opportunity at some of the bigger meets. So like some of the more local meets can have some kind of, you know, ties to the community in that aspect. And obviously it is the community, because that's who shows up to these meets, is the local weightlifting community. And that's what the LWC is all about, is, you know, building that community. And it's not a huge one that we have here in New Mexico, but it's getting bigger. Every meet that we show up to, there's more people, there's better experienced lifters, better coaching. Like, you just see the progress of the sport in general at local weightlifting meets. It's getting better. It's
yeah.
Getting
better. And one thing that's really great seeing is, you know, I love, I'm a big believer that weightlifting is a great, route for fitness and athletic development, and seeing how many masters and kids are kind of coming out of the woodwork, and it's really growing in those areas.
Yeah.
And it's so good to see, you know, kids hitting PRs and kind of making these improvements that we've seen for years and years as they, you know, struggle with learning the bar. And then every meet, there's a little bit more weight on. Yeah. And one of Shane's kids did over 100 kilos in the clean and jerk for the first time in a meet. And those kind of moments might not matter when you're at those kind of bigger national meets, but when it's just the community that you have and it's just the clubs that you know, and whether, you know everybody personally, it's the environment is just like really supportive. And I think that, you know, remembering to, you know, take advantage of those local meets where there's that. It's like, we're just here, and this is the ceremony in honor of the thing that we all love. Yeah. You know, it's really great to see everybody supporting each other, and, you know, regardless of what club somebody's from, everybody in the room is behind them.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so great meet up there. Little PR clean and jerk for me. Some heavier openers for Mundo. Chris is back from his surgery, and Ari and Jess just really took it away, and... really looking forward to this year. I think we've got, we're all lined up for some good lifting, and yeah, it's going to be fun to buckle down and, you know, start pushing again.
And one thing I wanted to mention real quick, I don't know how many of our folks actually listen to the podcast, but if any of them do, just thank you for showing up. Thank you for helping. A lot of them helped count cards, keep lifters on track, and help load plates, and just provided general support, even though they weren't lifting themselves. And I really appreciate that. That's just like exactly what, you know, you would hope for in building a community as far as how the gym goes too. So
that it was really cool to see everybody come up to hang out and just watch some lifting. And we had some new people that haven't done a competition yet. This was the first one they came to watch. And I think that, it was just, I'm just incredibly grateful for everybody that's at our gym for, you know, coming out and supporting us and, you know, letting us have a day that where we're lifting and they're helping us out. You know, I think that that kind of, flip of roles is kind of a fun experience for them because they get to say, no, stop trying to load your own bar, or okay, you have to go now. And I think that that is really important in developing your own club. So if you're a coach and you're the only one that knows how to run cards in your club, start teaching your athletes that, because at those bigger meets you might have somebody going two people going at once. And it's just part of the competition. And if they understand how to count cards for somebody else, if you're in a pinch, they can step in and help. Everybody contributes. But also, learning how to run cards could be really beneficial for your understanding of what's happening during your lifting.
Yeah.
You know, so you better understand what it means when you're eight out. And, you know, you can kind of get some insights into a better understanding of how the competition flows. Because our goal is not just to make people that lift, but people that will be involved in the sport for decades, right? Marshalling and refereeing and coaching and, you know, kind of building up this, you know, trying to help build the sport from the bottom up, because as cool as the national level stuff is, this local level is really what makes that stuff possible.
Right.
Having enough people involved at the local level to find the talent that goes to the national championships, but also just everybody that's involved in the local level is financing those competitions. They're paying the stipends for our Olympians.
Right.
They're involved in this. It's bigger than yourself. And I think that, you know, helping people learn how to count and be involved in different aspects of the sport, not just as lifters, but encouraging them to, like, okay, well, maybe you want to referee. How well do you know the rules? Can you follow a lot? Like, if you're watching the meet, can you guess what the judges are going to say before they do it? You know, so you're always, there's so many different avenues that you can be involved in. And whether you're a lifter for 45 years, like Mike Mansoor, or Bill Waugh, you know, these guys that are kind of the local legends here around, or you're refereeing and marshalling and kind of being involved in that kind of support technical official capacity, there's just there's so much to be involved in, and it was really great to see everybody coming out. And I'm just grateful that we get to go to these meets and that we get to lift and we get to coach. And I don't know, I'm just feeling really lucky these days that this is what I get to do every day.
It's a good experience, and then it's a good way to start off the year, just, you know, setting the bar and trying to see where we're at as far as, you know, where our training's been. And it's kind of hard to compete right after the holidays. A lot of people, like, don't want to be in the middle of cutting weight over Christmas or New Year, and they don't want to deal with, you know, trying to get into the gym with some of these holidays that come up. But I don't know, I find it rewarding to be like, right out of the gate, let's go ahead and set some PRs and, you know, try to get some meets in the books and things like that. So, like, I think it's a good way to just, like, set the tone for the year too, even if it doesn't go as, you know, as well as you'd hope. But, you know, it's just the way it is. You just got to keep, pick yourself up, move on, learn what you can from it, and keep continuing to press on and get stronger and improve, make some improvements.
Yeah, so that's our recap of the local meet that we just did. Once again, thanks everybody for coming out, and make sure that you're, wherever you're listening, you're, you know, involved in that local weightlifting scene, because, you know, sometimes we don't get to stay in touch with everybody, and it's great. It's great to see people and catch up, and you know, even if it's just little bits here and there, it's always a rewarding experience getting out to those local events.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, so I thought that, this time of year, people are, you know, either underway in their resolutions, or they're, you know, starting to set their goals and kind of work towards what they want to see happen in 2020. And I think that I wanted to kind of bring attention to what I see as the two kind of templates for what kind of goal setting looks like. So there in my mind there's basically two resolutions, that like two genres of resolution. So the first would be that you have a specific thing that you want to accomplish and you're setting a goal for that, and that can be, you know, moving up or down a weight class, that can be improving your total, that can be qualifying for a competition, you know, expanding your business, whatever it might be. And you have those kind of task-oriented goals, right? Where you're saying, this is what I'm pushing for. But I think what a lot of times people land on at the end of the year is, if they reflect, I think the other one is that people tend to say, I was too caught up in my work and I let my relationship slide. Or I just wasn't present for, like, I was always distracting myself or, like, pushing too hard, and you're constantly living in the future for that year. So what I thought it would be kind of interesting to talk about today is the juxtaposition between those two things. How do you balance striving towards a goal and not getting so caught up in that future goal that you miss your ability to be present in the moment on the day-to-day? And I see those as kind of two conflicting things, because a lot of times, if you're setting a task goal, right, it seems like a lot of times if you kind of really dig in, the goal that you're shooting for, it's not just, you know, so we'll keep using weightlifting examples, but if this is, you know, business or how many books you're going to read this year or anything, but trying to figure out, is it doing the thing is the thing an end in itself? Or is it the feeling that you're going to get from doing that thing? Like, do you want a total 240, just a total 240? I think if you really look at it, it's, no, I want to feel the accomplishment of doing that. It's right. The feeling that's associated with it. It's not just the thing itself that's going to give you kind of the reward that you're looking for. But, you know, it's, if you get so caught up in chasing your number that you forget to, like, really be present during all the rest of your time. So, like, if you come home from the gym and you just analyze your videos and you're stuck in this loop of, how am I going to get better? How am I going to get better? You're never taking a breath. You're never kind of having that, you know, present moment kind of experience. So do you feel like those two things are antithetical, or do you think there's some sort of synthesis available, between wanting to be present and wanting to accomplish? Like, how do you balance ambition with learning to be content with what you have?
Well, I think for myself, I kind of take a page from the book of the Stoics, and I mean that with a capital S. I'm not talking about, like, Stoic as in, like, emotionless. I'm talking about Stoic, the capital S, the philosophy. And that's a lot of the Stoic philosophers were in positions of leadership. You think about Marcus Aurelius; he was the Roman emperor. And you think about Seneca, and you think about Cato, and some of these other guys that had, you know, positions of either power, like in the Senate, in the Roman Senate, or they were just, like, wealthy and had, you know, businesses and things like that. So how do you balance the idea of achieving something but being present in the moment? Because if you're striving for things, that means that you're not completely content with what's presently going on.
Yeah.
Right? You're wanting something else to happen. And so I think the balance comes in the idea of playing your best, right? So let's take, I like to tie this in with weightlifting, where, you know, I can't control whether the referees give me good lifts or not, or I can to an extent, you know, but, like, I can't control how the crowd reacts to my lifts. I can't control how much noise there is in the environment. I can't control how hot or cold the room is. The only thing that I can control is how I play, like, how I perform. And so I have to focus on what I'm doing to the best of my ability. And if that happens to be something that helps me achieve something, then that's good, right? Then I'm possibly, like, I'm heading in the right direction. I'm getting the results that, you know, I've put in my work, and I'm getting the results out of that work. So for me, I think it's more of the idea of, like, always striving to do your best of your ability, right? And when you set goals, it's a goal that's in line with allowing you to do your best. But if you fall short, then there's room for improvement. There's room to kind of, like, maneuver. It's not like, oh, if I don't do this, I'm a terrible athlete. If I don't hit this total, I'm, you know, I'm not good enough, or I'm a terrible weightlifter. It's more of like, I'm going to play to the best of my ability. And if I hit this qualifying total, great. Right? So it's more of like, I'm trying to do my best to achieve without being attached to an outcome. Because that outcome, being attached to the outcome, is like, oh, I didn't qualify for AO finals. Like, I'm such a failure. Or, like, I didn't hit the numbers that I wanted to in the meet. The whole meet is a disaster now. But that's not true. There's stuff that you can learn from it. There's things that you can gain. There's things that you can improve. There's, you know, the reality of it is that it's a tool to measure where you're at. And whenever you look at any outside situation, when you're goal setting for the year, whether it's a resolution, if you set a resolution and then you fall short, are you a failure because you didn't meet that goal? Or did you just not do everything you possibly could to achieve it? So there's the difference for me, is just like, when you set these resolutions for the year, it's like, oh, I want to lose 100 pounds over the year, right? But then you don't set smaller goals, like maybe, you know, 10 pounds a month, or, you know, because, like, if you give yourself some leeway in some of these areas, you know, you'll be able to say, well, I made a lot of progress. It doesn't necessarily mean that, like, you're a failure if you don't hit these exact things. So that's why I kind of look at it as that, as more of like, do your best, achieve what you can, and set yourself up for success, as opposed to being attached to a specific outcome. Because, like, if you lost 80 pounds and your goal was to lose 100, are you a failure? You still lost 80 pounds. You still did a good thing. You still put in a lot of work and made a lot of progress. So, like, that's how you achieve things. You still achieve something. You still lost 80 pounds. But, like, saying that 100 or nothing, like, that
black and white
type of view of, like, success and failure, that is what makes people unhappy, like, in the end, when they get to those end result ranges. It's like, well, I didn't achieve what I wanted to. It was like, yeah, but did you do your best? And is that good enough for you? And that's really what it comes down to. And that's how I separate. So how do you look at it? Like, what do you think about when you see goals and when people, like, try to achieve them, and what they're trying to accomplish?
Well, so I think that what people have to understand is that if you figure out why it is that you want something. So, right, say you want to change careers, or, you know, you're looking for, like, you're unhappy with your current standing and where you're at, trying to figure out what are the actual motivations, because our instincts aren't always the best indicators of our actual motivations. Sure. So if you say, you know, like, I want to do this job because I want to change this up because I feel like there's something missing. Really figuring out what is it in your current day that is actually missing, and what's the goal, what's the feeling that's going to provide, and then really trying to be able to articulate, like, oh, I'm not helping enough people. Like, so I like my job. It's challenging. I get to learn new things. It's these sort of things. And this is speaking a specific thing that I had a conversation with my wife about, was, you know, it's like, okay, well, like, what do you feel like falling short in this, and, like, why do you want to kind of move on to something else? And trying to isolate, like, okay, well, is it that you want to help people and there isn't really an avenue for that in what you're doing right now? Right. And then trying to figure out, it's like, okay, well, is it really a new job, or do I just need to add an avenue of how do I, you know, do some volunteer work to feel like I'm, like, satisfying that section? Because, sure, I think that, you know, we try to look for one thing to satisfy all of our things.
That's
so
a
you're
good
never
point.
Gonna have one thing that satisfies everything, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And if you're thinking in that way, it can lead you to feel like you need to radically change something. But really, it might be that you just need to add 2 hours of volunteer work a day to kind of satisfy that need that's not being met sure. by your job or your hobby.
Right.
And I think that if you kind of think of it as, you know, the important thing isn't, you know, so if you're on, you know, two opposite, like you're on a cliff face, right? And there's kind of two cliffs and you're trying to bridge the gap. The other side is the goal. The important thing is building the bridge, you know, and that's where most of your, because the goal itself is only going to last a second.
Sure.
The goal is impermanent, especially if it's a lift.
Right.
You know, if your goal is to clean and jerk 150 kilos, the time that you've actually clean and jerked 150 kilos is like 3 seconds.
Right.
If you're looking for a lifetime of enjoyment and like meaning and fulfillment from something that only lasts a fraction of a second, you're gonna feel empty when you get there.
Sure.
But if you focus on like developing the qualities that allow you to kind of bridge that gap, or, you know, build your way up, and maybe you don't, you know, get all of the final things down to where you're super comfortable on the other side, but that act of building towards it. And I think that's why I think process goals are so important,
right.
where it's, you know, being fully into your training session and trying to eliminate distractions while you're doing that. Like, did you train very, very hard today? Did you kind of stay in the groove? Did you focus on the things you know are important? And learning to find enjoyment in those steps that you're taking towards that end goal, but not being so attached to the goal itself that you can't see the progress that you've made, even if you fall a little bit short. And I think that I don't have a firm grasp of how to properly balance that kind of, you know, meditation state where you're like, okay, I'm just present and I'm in the moment. Because this is where I kind of don't really know, like, if you look at, you know, wanting to have an end goal of your meditation, right? So if you're, you know, in the Buddhist camp where you're trying to reach that state of detachment, or like, you know, being separate from your wants and not really, and being okay with whatever's happening to you.
Sure.
I think that the danger of that is that if you're okay with everything, then you're just kind of stagnant. Like, you can be kind of stuck,
like,
right?
Passive, so, yeah, like passive in living life. Like, you could be passive in the way you live your life.
Yeah, right. And I think that, you know, there might be some kind of stillness and quality that comes from that. And I think that, you know, if you look at the Stoic sage, right, where the idea is that if you're the perfect person, right, you're the perfect Stoic, you'll be unfazed by whatever befalls you,
yeah.
right? It's not that you won't feel those emotions, it's just that you won't fight them.
Well, yeah, because the idea is that not to hide yourself from the world, but to embrace the world as it is, and to still have a sense of inner stillness, even though the world is chaotic around you. Like, you can't control the world and what, you know, goes on in it, but you can control your own reactions to how the world, like, how, what the world brings into your life.
But what I have trouble with there is that, so that end state of, you know, the Buddha or,
sure.
you know, the Stoic sage,
sure.
is that you're so okay with the world that, you know, you kind of just can coast, where, like, you know, if it's describing it as, you know, you're so in harness of your emotions that you can watch your firstborn child die and just kind of go, oh, that happened.
Right.
I don't know if that's the right
no.
end goal. You
no,
know what I mean?
I don't think that is the right end goal. And so, like, the idea isn't to suppress any emotion or to ignore any emotion or to say completely. Because I used to think, like, maybe emotions are the enemy, right? And maybe they should completely be ignored. But that can't be a good way to approach things either, because the way that we're driven, both by motivation and our own decision-making processes, those are attached to feelings. And that's how we motivate ourselves, is by attaching feelings to outcomes, right? And processes. And so when you set up a goal of saying, like, oh, I want to be better at this, or I want this specific number, then you're getting a feeling inside of, when you accomplish that feeling of accomplishment is what you're going to chase, right? Because that's what's driving the emotion behind doing that thing. Because if you only looked at it as a exercise of pure reason, why even bother? Like, what is an extra 3 kilos on your total gonna? Is it gonna make your life better? Is it gonna make you, you know, that much better of a lifter? Maybe, maybe not. But like, the idea of just like, if you just focus on training as hard as you can and then doing your best in competition, if you happen to meet that goal, then that's even better. That's like the process lined up with the result, right? That's what you want as much as possible. But sometimes those things don't always match up. The process, sometimes you can work your butt off in the process and not get the result you want. And sometimes, like, maybe people don't work as hard in the process and get the results they want. So there's like some gray area in all this stuff. So I think it's not a matter of just like, the idea isn't to be like, let's say we wanted 100 members in our gym, right? Is it 100 members a number that we need because egotistically we want that? Is it a number that financially we want, or is it a number that makes us feel like we have a sense of achievement, or is it just an arbitrary way of saying this is a way to measure how our business is growing? You know, so like when anything that you do, you measure progress by like numbers and achievements and results, but you don't ever take into the fact that like, how many people have you helped along the way? How many of those people's goals have you helped achieve? And how many people did you, you know, make stronger this time around? Or, you know, if it's all about the numbers, it's all about quantity, you can lose a lot in that process. So for me, it's more of like, how much of an impact do we make? How much do we change people's perceptions of their own strengths and weaknesses in their physical body and in their mental states as well? So like, for me, it's, we're contributing as much as we can, but we can always do better. So that's what it's like for me. So like, yes, the process of wanting more isn't necessarily something that we should always strive to like be in, but taking a look at the bigger picture and seeing, you know, people are ends in of themselves, right? They're not the means. You don't use people. We should try to help people as much as we can to achieve what they need to achieve. And that's why, like, that's what separates just being selfish and wanting all this, you know, stuff for yourself or for others. And then what basically is the difference between being greedy about what you want out of your goals and your processes and things like that, and basically being present and content and mindful of what's happening in around you right now.
Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah, I think that makes sense. Okay. And I think that kind of playing off that, you could say that, you know, that kind of greediness is like, you need to have the right amount of balance between the two. And I think that the extreme of being so enlightened that you just live in a bathtub,
right,
and like you don't do anything, like, yeah, Diogenes, you know, you're you know, like fasting and just sitting and you're never really like working towards something. Right. And I think that you have to balance between that far end of the spectrum and the other end, which would be, you know, what I call, you know, ambition for ambition's sake, which, sure, is kind of that kind of greedy drive of like, oh, I really want this thing. And I think that, you know, finding that right middle path where you're enjoying the path, because like the present is all that's actually real. It's all that's really there.
Right.
And if you're catching yourself, you're always dwelling on a mistake that you made or thinking about the goal that you have, you're never really enjoying the steps that you're taking to get there, which, sure, is where I think that the power of goal setting comes in, is really in that path between where you are and then working towards that. So keeping that goal in mind, but being able to have those moments where you check in and say, okay, well, I'm actually like here now,
right,
and I'm enjoying this step, and trying to like, not necessarily even slow down, but just taking that moment to just kind of breathe it in and kind of appreciate what you have now, where, right, it's, yeah, we want to continue to grow our club, but like when I'm there on a Monday night and it's busy and I'm helping people and everybody's kind of jiving and it's like a nice training environment, I'm not thinking about how many more people am I going to get in right now. Right. I'm thinking about, how am I helping these people right now? Yeah. What am I doing today And being able to have those kind of times that you're really in that present moment along the journey, I think is that balance that you want to strike. And I think that another important aspect to figuring out what you actually want to do with your goals or your life or these sort of things is weighing, analyzing the goal and saying it's like, okay, well, if your goal was to lose 20 pounds, are you doing that for yourself or for somebody else? Because if you're setting those goals where it's, I want someone to see me this way, so it's like, I want to total 300 so that I'm respected as a lifter, versus I want to total 300 to see what I can do. And I think that, those are the same goal, but the motivations will dictate how enjoyable that process is. Because if you're always tying your outcomes to how other people are going to see you or what other people want from you, it's the same thing as like letting other people dictate your life. And if you're setting those goals for not an intrinsic reason, but for I want to be seen as this, if you're setting goals that rely on how other people see you, you're going to fall short even if you accomplish them because other people don't actually care. Like nobody's as invested in you as you are. And I think that, a lot of times, goals people set, or if it's, oh, I want to make this much money, or I want to have this kind of house, it's show goals, right? Where it's this is how I want people to see me. Like I have a neighbor who has like a Jaguar and he never drives it, but once a week he just parks it in his driveway so that everyone knows that he has it. Like that goal isn't satisfying anything. That's just a presentation, right? It's that's building up like the costume of who you want other people to think that you are, but making the goal more about becoming who you actually are, not what other people think you should be, not what the cultural messages that we get about things that are important, but really, any goal that you're setting should be a goal that in some way is about really becoming yourself and figuring out what kind of person you are and like what kind of meat body that you're piloting. So figuring out your goals pertaining to who you want to be and what's really important to you and having these kind of deeper meanings attached to it. Because I think that, if you're looking at training, it's a gateway to mindfulness. Because when you're in a training session, it's that period of the time, and this was my first experience with this, is of only doing one thing in that moment. And that's what I think a lot of the value in training is you're forced into mindfulness. It's forced upon you, right? So you're not meditating and practicing, focusing on your breath. You're just snatching and clean and jerking, and during those snatches and clean and jerks, there are seconds of stillness, fractional
Well, I
seconds.
think that's why people have such a hard time training in silence, because of that mental aspect of it. What you were just describing is just like those moments of stillness where the only thing that you can be doing is focusing on the lifts themselves. And so like yeah, continue expanding on that, but like I've noticed that people find that space uncomfortable, so they have to be distracted by music or some kind of external apparatus to help them block out those thoughts, or that it's not even thought, that stillness sometimes, just the quiet of just a single thing, single task that you're involved in doing.
Yeah, and I think that, my first kind of glimpses of this came during heavy training sessions where it was you get to the end and you go, wow, I didn't think about the homework I had due or, who was mad at me or that thing that was bothering me. I was just here moving my body and lifting these weights. And you get to the end and you're like, wow, I haven't thought about anything else in 2 hours. And I think that that's one of the appeals of doing physical training is it shows you that you have these moments of focus and that it's those focused moments that are the pleasurable aspect of it. Because what you're doing is physically grueling, but mentally it's quieting, it's stilling. And I think that that's one of the things that kind of brought me towards thinking about meditation on a whole is that one of the lessons you can kind of take from lifting is it's not the lifting itself that's giving you that stillness.
Yeah.
It's not the lifting that creates the moment where you had times where you weren't thinking about something else. You were just in the moment doing the lift. And what's actually there is it's not the lift that's doing it. It's the focus. It's having your thoughts dialed in on one thing.
Right.
Right. And
yeah, that's what focus is.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, that kind of opened my eyes to there might be something to this whole meditation thing is that if you've realized that the focus is what's giving you pleasure and the focus is what's, you know, calming or, you know, enlightening about doing the physical activity, you can learn to look for that focus almost anywhere.
Right.
If you have a spare 5 minutes and you just watch the birds and just try to really focus on like what these pigeons are fighting about.
I watch
a lot of pigeons in my car at stoplights, but, you know, having those times that you're like just trying to really intently focus on something, and then meditation, that's the breath, but in weightlifting, that's the lift, rock climbing, that's don't fall. You know, so I think that, you know, these sort of physical outlets are ways to bring about the mindset that people talk about when you're meditating.
Sure.
And having, you know, your goals lined up with, you know, your lifting goal and your total, the enjoyable parts on the way to that total are those moments of really being there. It's, you know, hitting that push press PR in the middle of the cycle and just like feeling all of those sensations and that qualia of what is this experience like for me right now? So I think goals based around experiences rather than outcomes might be the thing.
Yeah. That's probably a good way to approach it.
To kind of summarize, it's like your goal should be to experience the weightlifting and the total is something you're working towards. But what really matters is the experiences you had on the way to the goal. And when you're setting your New Year's goals, not getting caught up in the end state, but using the end state as a means to get you into the spaces that are enjoyable on the way there, I think is kind of the important thing.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with that outlook, and it's a good way to definitely approach like goal setting and having a different approach and like enjoying the process more, just being mindful of the process and enjoying the process. Cause that's all you can really be involved in, right? You can't control results. You can't always control the way things go, in and out of training. And you definitely don't control a lot of competition. So
yeah, like, you know, you're on another person's clock.
Yeah. You just gotta do your best, enjoy it and enjoy the process. Because like if you don't enjoy training, if the idea of training is just this daunting, exhausting thing and competition is the only thing that matters, it's going to be like you're going to spend a lot of time unhappy and just a few seconds happy, because like competition doesn't last that long. It's just a few lifts.
Yeah.
And it,
you it's know, 10 single, seconds total,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. You train, you know, 3 months for one day on the platform. And so like, if you can learn to reverse that and enjoy the process, enjoy everything you did to get there, and then just take that day for what it is, you know, just, you know, another day to train, then there's no reason to be unhappy with any of the results that you get from any of that part of that process.
Yeah. And I think that this kind of brings back to one of the things that I've probably griped about on here in 30 out of 60 episodes is, you know, this idea of like grind culture where grind it's just culture, like, got to go put in work, grind. If you feel like you're going to work every time that you go to the gym, you might be doing it wrong. Like the gym me is like, so, you know, we're all adults. We have jobs. We have things that we have to worry about. And to me, the gym is the only time that you get to play again. Correct. Like you're a kid when you're in the gym. Like this is you playing. This is your jungle gym. This is you going down the slide 5 times in a row.
Right.
Because
right.
It's thrilling just like that, right? Yeah. So like when you're a little kid and you're going down the slide, you're like, woo, that was fun. I want to do it again. That's how I feel when I snatch. it's, oh, that was fun.
Let's go again. Yeah, let's go again.
And like, I have to rein myself in because I'll get caught up in it and just like, no, I want to go on that ride again.
Right.
And I think that, you know, if you remember that this is play, this is fun. Right. Sport isn't a grind. Sport is a privilege. You get to do this. You
get to do this. Yeah.
And like, you know, that like keeping that framework of like, you know, so I always like, I'll put it in the programs. I'll tell people, you know, it's like, oh, let's play weightlifting today.
Yeah.
Like it, just keep it light. You know, it's not a thing that nobody's forcing you to do this. This is for you.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that, you know, the hustle or grind, like, is just the wrong way to think about it. Because if you're always you're always working, then you're always at work. Like, nothing is ever for itself. That's you true. Know?
Yeah.
So like, make sure that, you know, your goal setting is kind of in line with that, where you're doing the thing to do it. Not necessarily, you have a goal that you want to reach, but the important thing is that you're going into the gym and you get to play for a couple of hours and see your friends and have these kind of community interactions where you have these kind of more meaningful things attached to that. So there's more on the periphery than the number, and the number can be what motivates you to come into the gym. But if you're feeling like you're dragging yourself in to the salt mines every day, like you're going to be less likely to reach that goal than if like your time in the gym is the only time that you're free to really do anything that you want.
Sure.
And I think that like, I think that outlook is really important. And that's one of the things that I try to stress to our members and, you know, you guys that are listening to this podcast, is like, we get to do this. We're so lucky that we have a gym with bars that spin and spacious platforms. And like, we get to spend these couple hours a day with our friends lifting weights. It's a privilege, and we're lucky to be in this place. And if you're always focused on like, oh, why can't I squat 120 yet? Right, why can't I squat 120 yet? You'll never enjoy the fact that you're squatting 100.
Right.
Like, you have to have that outlook of, well, you don't have to, but it's, I think it's best if you have the outlook like, oh my God, I'm on a planet and I have food and I have friends and I get to lift weights with them a couple hours a day. And like, it's that time where you have a break from the monotony.
Right.
Like I really hate that grind thing. It really bugs me a lot.
The more I think about it, the more disenchanted I get with that culture and that idea too. Cause like it was ingrained in a lot of people in the military, and I know a lot of the sports industry has it too. It's like, go big or go home, grind till, you know, the work is done, it isn't done until it's done type mentality. But like, I know what you're saying, and I kind of am more in line with that aspect of like, we get to do this. We get to snatch, we get to squat, we get to have our own space where we get to weightlift and have fun and enjoy it. And I am grateful for it. I appreciate it. So, that concludes today's episode, and you're just a small recap about why local weightlifting meets are important and our experience at them, and then a little bit about the difference between having ambitious goals and goals that are more in line with who you are. I think we went over that pretty well. So if you have any questions, you can always contact us, like we've mentioned before, at asaweightlifting@gmail.com, and then on DM us on Instagram at Albuquerque Strength Academy.
Yeah, and please go ahead and give the podcast a review if you have time. Just go into iTunes. It takes a little bit. We really appreciate all of those ratings and reviews you guys leave. And yeah, until next week, guys, play weightlifting.
There you go, y'all. Happy lifting.